This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. And here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Conflict continues to be the primary driver for the largest share of people facing acute food insecurity.
That was Patrick Jackson from the Food and Agriculture Organization in the Geneva office on urgent action to stave off famine and death in violence-prone countries. Details coming up. Also, the war in Ethiopia's Tigray region is now spreading to other parts of the country. These stories and more ahead on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The United Nations warns global hunger is increasing and urgent action is needed to stave off famine and death over coming months in nearly two dozen unstable, violence-prone countries. The warning is in a newly released report by the Food and Agriculture Organization and the World Food Program. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The report from the WFP and FAO focuses on the particularly serious situation in 23 so-called hunger hotspots. Most of those countries are in sub-Saharan Africa, with others in Central America, Asia, and the Middle East. Patrick Jackson is Food and Agriculture Organization officer in charge of the Geneva office. He says acute hunger is set to increase in those countries over the next 4 months without urgent and scaled-up humanitarian assistance.
Conflict continues to be the primary driver for the largest share of people facing acute food insecurity. Weather extremes and climate variability are likely to affect several parts of the world during the outlook period.
The report says dry conditions are likely to affect Haiti, Nigeria's Middle Belt, and the Dry Corridor in Guatemala, while above-average rainfall and flooding is forecast in South Sudan, Central and Eastern Sahel, and Gulf of Guinea countries. The report highlights the perilous situation in Ethiopia and Madagascar, the world's newest highest alert hunger hotspots. Director of the World Food Program Geneva Office, Annalisa Conte, says the aggravation of conflict in recent months is having a catastrophic impact on the food security of the Tigrayan population in Ethiopia. She warns more than 400,000 people will face starvation if they do not receive sufficient humanitarian aid.
If we move to Madagascar, Madagascar is experiencing the worst drought in 40 years. On top of that, economic decline, largely caused by COVID, and as a result, 1.3 million people are currently facing acute food insecurity.
The FAO and WFP say fighting blockades that cut off life-saving aid to families on the verge of famine and a lack of funding are hampering efforts to provide emergency food aid to millions of desperate people. They say families that rely on humanitarian aid to survive are hanging by a thread. They note most of those on the verge of famine in the 23 hotspots are farmers and must receive help to resume food production. That, they say, will allow them to feed themselves and become self-sufficient. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The eight-month-old war between Ethiopia's central government and the Tigray People's Liberation Front, TPLF, the party that controls Tigray, has spread to other parts of northern Ethiopia, risking a further destabilization of the country. The president of the Amhara regional government urged all young people to take up arms against TPLF fighters who say they are advancing fast, deeper south into Amhara territory. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed what the development could mean for the Ethiopian Federation with Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies.
This move south from the TPLF into Amhara region and into Afar region is certainly troubling. It clearly marks an escalation to the conflict there. The TPLF is not satisfied simply with defending the territory of Tigray, but is instead wanting to take the offensive into other parts of Ethiopia. And this will put more pressure on Ethiopia's federal systems. Remember that Ethiopia held its first national elections in parts of the country where there wasn't fighting. So it was an important, if partial, step toward democracy. And, you know, this has been accompanied, of course, with some of the political reforms, civil liberties ushered in when Abiy first came into power. So the escalation of fighting in Tigray, I think, is going to put pressure on the rest of the federal system throughout Ethiopia. You know, the initial reaction has been a rallying around the federal government, and the other regions are supporting, you know, renewed efforts to try to push back in Tigray. And there have been a rise in volunteers to join the army. So I think in the short term, there has been some sort of a unifying effect. However, as this goes on and, you know, the pressure on the federal government grows, you know, we very likely could see greater fragmentation within the federal system and each of the regional governments going their own way and protecting their own interest.
But could the Tigrayan forces' moves encourage other ethnicities in Ethiopia to revolt for more autonomy?
Well, this was a concern initially when Tigray refused to recognize the delay in the elections and was basically asserting its autonomy back in 2020. However, you know, that didn't happen. You know, instead, there was an appreciation that other regions needed to support the federal system. However, the ethnic federal system that Ethiopia has currently is highly fragile. A lot of the roles and authorities are still to be worked out. Whenever you have an overlay of ethnicity and political authorities, it incentivizes an ethnic lens to, you know, all sorts of policies and actions. And so it's a very sensitive and fragile time, all the while that Ethiopia is trying to move towards a democratic system. So it's possible that what's going on in Tigray will ultimately lead to a fragmentation. In the short term, other regions of the country have not emulated Tigray, but have instead thrown in their lot with the federal government.
Tigrayan forces pushed also into Afar, the region to the east of Tigray, where they said they plan to target Amhara troops fighting alongside the federal military. Afar is home to the main highway and railway linking landlocked Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, with the seaport of Djibouti. What do you think of the Tigrayan forces' calculations based on their past experience fighting against Mengistu Haile Mariam?
It's really hard to say at this point what the motivations of Tigrayan leadership are. They justified the attacks in Afar on the need to reopen supply routes into Tigray. And so it opens up the question about, you know, what other broader designs the TPLF may have. You know, all sides remember that the TPLF did march down from Tigray and take Addis and push out the brutal Mengistu regime. And this ultimately then led to the TPLF remaining in power as a minority government for the next 30 years. And in the process, you know, building up great resentment towards the Tigrayans from the rest of the Ethiopian population. So while the precedent of fighting Mengistu is out there, I think it's a very different situation this time around. I think the TPLF would face great pressure from the entire country that does not want to see a repeat of the Tigrayans, you know, with 7% of the population, you know, dominating Ethiopian politics and the economy. So I think it'd be a very difficult position for the TPLF to sustain over time. They would face active resistance, where in the case of Mengistu, he was widely despised across the country and people were happy to see him go. So I think it's an unlikely possibility, but it's something that is on the table. And given the fragmentation of the federal forces, it's clear that the TPLF is currently, you know, the strongest military force in the country right now.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with my colleague, Mohammed Al-Shinawi. The U.S. official who wrote a Pulitzer Prize-winning book on genocide is visiting Ethiopia this week to press the government to lift what the U.S. calls a blockade on humanitarian aid to the conflict-hit Tigray region. Samantha Power, administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, hopes to meet with Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, who has asserted that there is no hunger in Tigray. Ethiopian officials blame the aid blockade on rival Tigray forces who have retaken much of the region, but a senior U.S. aid official says that's 100% not the case. Analysts fear the war has opened a second front with the potential to worsen the humanitarian crisis in the region. For more, International Edition's Chinedu Afor spoke with Alai Verji, senior advisor to the African Center, U.S. Institute for Peace in Washington.
The war has become a two-front war. There is a western and southern theater on the border between the Amhara region and the Tigray region and leading towards the Sudan. And then there's a new front on the eastern side of Tigray towards Afar and Djibouti. And this is the new development. And there is fighting going on in the Afar region, which the new feature of this war.
Looks like the war is spiraling out of control, is it?
I don't know if it's spiraling out of control. It's only expanding. And that's because there are military objectives that Tigray People's Liberation Front and the Tigray Defense Forces have, and they've stated those. The government forces, the federal government forces, backed by Amhara state and other states, are responding to that. And so for the moment, it's not out of control, but it's only expanding.
What are the possibilities that neighboring countries might be drawn into this conflict?
I think the possibility has always been there. Of course, Eritrean forces were involved from a very early stage of the conflict. The more that the war moves towards the west, the more it concerns the western neighbors, including Sudan. To the east is a little bit different because both Djibouti and Somalia don't really have significant forces to be involved, but certainly there's always been the potential for regional involvement.
The fallout of this war has fallen hard on refugees, and they are, depending on who you are listening to, counter claims of who is actually responsible. But the United Nations say the situation on the ground is really bad. What are your sources telling you?
I think the situation is getting worse. It's not only a matter of refugees. It's mostly a matter of people within the region of Tigray, many of whom are internally displaced. They may not cross an international border, but they're still in dire need of assistance. The World Food Programme has said that it's having great difficulty getting sufficient food into the region, and they are running out of supplies, and millions of people are dependent on those supplies, so it's certainly a deteriorating situation.
Reports indicate that Ethiopia is mobilizing and the Tigray people are also fortifying. Do you see an end to this?
I think both sides have been very clear about their mobilization, and this is obviously a very worrying sign in terms of the desire for restraint and looking towards ending the conflict. But ultimately, the solution is a political one, not a military one. And so whether there are new troops on the ground from either side, it will still require a discussion at a political level to find some sort of resolution. And I think that is still very much possible if both sides feel that they can actually engage in talks.
That was Alai Verji, senior advisor to the African Center, U.S. Institute for Peace, speaking with International Edition's Chinedu Afor. South Africa has received the first batch of almost 6 million COVID-19 vaccine doses donated by the United States. The consignment arrived Saturday, just as the African country, so far worst affected by the pandemic, was running out of jabs. Coronavirus has claimed the lives of more than 72,000 people in South Africa and infected almost 2.5 million. Darren Taylor reports that fatalities continue to spike in several regions.
So far, 7 million people in South Africa have received at least a single dose of vaccine, still well short of its target of 40 million of the 60 million population. Infectious diseases specialist Shabir Madi says both the Pfizer and the Johnson & Johnson jabs, the vaccines being rolled out in South Africa, offer a high degree of protection against serious COVID-19 two to 3 weeks after being given. But he says it's disappointing that not enough elderly people have been immunized.
Currently, the figure stands at about 65% of people above the age of 60 having been vaccinated. So one third of them have not as yet been vaccinated, which is a problem because they make up close to 50% of all of the people that die of COVID-19 in South Africa.
Another reason for climbing death rates, says Mardi, is that people with illnesses that increase their risk of getting serious COVID-19 aren't being pushed to the front of the vaccination queue.
We need to make a concerted effort to ensure that those that do have underlying medical conditions and people above the age of 60, we get a first dose into their arms as quickly as possible. And we want at least 90% of those individuals to be vaccinated before we're going to see some significant impact with the vaccines reducing death and hospitalization.
Another reason for climbing death rates, says Mardi, is that people with illnesses that increase their risk of getting serious COVID-19 aren't being pushed to the front of the vaccination queue.
The reason we're seeing young people die this time around and ending up in hospital is just a function of the much larger number of people that are actually being infected in this particular wave compared with the number of young people that were infected in previous waves, simply because this variant, unfortunately, is much, much more transmissible and it's much easier to be infected if in an environment where the virus is circulating.
Mardi says the U.S. government's shipment of vaccines has arrived too late to ease South Africa's third outbreak, but should lessen the impact of the fourth resurgence expected in 3 to 4 months. He adds it's disturbing that despite the many deaths from COVID-19 in the country so far, some citizens continue to voice doubts about the jabs.
The core message to them is that the toss-up is between getting vaccinated and protected against COVID-19, despite there being a relatively very small risk of side effects, or remaining unprotected and actually dying of COVID-19. So you've got the choice to make, and that is especially if you're in that group of individuals that is at risk of developing severe disease. For me, the mathematics, the equation behind it is quite simple. The benefits of taking a chance with a vaccine, which you might have some doubts about, which I don't have any doubts about, far exceeds any sort of risk that you might have in mind.
The government's resisting public pressure to make COVID-19 vaccinations compulsory because they otherwise put others at risk. But the administration of President Cyril Ramaphosa maintains it's every individual's right to decide whether to be immunized. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
In Zimbabwe, the Harare City Council says it will soon hand over bad debts to a collection agency. The authority is owed millions of dollars by residents who are behind on paying their rates, which cover basic services. Critics, however, worry the timing during a pandemic may be off.
Michael Chidieme is with the Harare City Council, and he rejects the view that council should be lenient with those who owe it money. He says not collecting payment means services can't be provided.
It's equally insensitive to say we should not collect money that is due to the council, money which is supposed to go to our service delivery. So if service delivery suffers, it means our clinics will not be functional. People want to be treated at our clinics. It means they won't be functional. And we are in a COVID era. So we need all the resources to resource our functions so that we are able to provide services. We are able to provide water. We are able to provide health services. We are able to provide good roads. We are able to provide street lighting. We are able to provide wastewater. We are able to collect garbage.
However, many residents say they are not getting the services such as water or rubbish collection that they pay for. Lorin Mupasiri is the director of the Combined Harare Residents Associations. She says the issue of paying rates is complicated.
We always support the idea that residents must pay for services that they are receiving from City of Harare. But where they are not receiving any services, because we use a human rights-based approach, and also according to the Administrative Justice Act, of which is our local law, citizens must have the right to access administrative justice. And that means if we are talking about bill payments, citizens must be paying what they are receiving.
And then There is the pandemic, which has left majority of Zimbabweans with very little disposable income. What's more, Mopasiri says there are various factors discouraging residents from paying their rates.
It's not just the pandemic. Yes, the pandemic is there, and it has incapacitated a lot of residents, because you realize that more than 75% of Harare population, they are in the informal sector. And the informal sector is the one that has been most affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, mainly due to the lockdown restrictions. So it also reduced the capacity of citizens to pay their bills. Citizens have genuine grievances concerning the issues of transparency and accountability within the city of Harare.
Chideme says the council is putting its house in order, and soon the debt collector will begin pressing for payments. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashi from Harare.
With defending champion Kone Selous Kipruto absent, Sofiane El Bakkali of Morocco broke Kenya's 40-year stranglehold on the 3,000-meter steeplechase gold medals with a time of 8 minutes, 8.90 seconds. With a strong reputation in distant events, Africa took the first five places, Lamacha Garma of Ethiopia winning the silver medal, and Kenya's Benjamin Kigain capturing bronze. Kenya's Hellen Obiri, the reigning world champion in the women's 5,000 meters run, repeated her silver medal winning performance from the last summer games. She finished just under 1.5 seconds behind Sifan Hassan, who was born in Ethiopia but competes for the Netherlands, as African natives took the first six places at the 5,000. Hassan won gold in the world championships at 1,500 and 10,000 meters. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the